Welcome to Flip the Focus. This is a series designed to amplify female voices in tech. I am Jen Dobby, and as a female creative director working in tech, I got fed up with the status quo. Throughout this series, Flip the Focus, I'm going to be interviewing female funders, founders, and fearless leaders in tech. And each time they'll leave us with insights on how we can each help to amplify theirs and every female voice in tech. So, let's not hold back. Let's get into it and flip the focus with our very first guest. This is Noga Edelstein. So a little background about Noga before we get going. She really is a force. She used to be general counsel at Yahoo 7. And while there, she discovered a real issue for working women who were failing to find support in order to run their home successfully, right? We all know trying to get the balance right. So Noga decided to do something about it and co-founded an on-demand home services startup called UrbanU. It scaled rapidly Australia-wide, and it was a successful exit via trade sale. So following on from that, she had so many insights into startup journeys, and then her ability to work hands-on with founders mean that now she's really sought after as an investor and an advisor. So including venture partner at Black Nova VC, she's a director of advisory at Tractor, entrepreneur in residence at UTS Startups. The list goes on. This is so extraordinary, Noga. We're really excited to have you with us today. And I think that we can agree that you are the absolute perfect person to start us on our journey of discovery in this first section of Flip the Focus, which is funding in Australia.
Well, thank you for that very kind introduction, Jen. It's great to be here. And yes, I've been in the ecosystem for about 10 years now, and I've seen the funding landscape from various different perspectives. So I'm very happy to share some learnings and insights with you guys today.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I think for a lot of us, understanding all those different nuances in the tech funding landscape can be pretty complicated. So would you be able to do something, I guess, at the beginning of this and just talk to us about what the landscape looks like in Australia? So are there different types of funders in Australia?
Yeah, I'll break it down for you. I'll try and make it simple. Essentially, let's call them three categories of funders in most startup ecosystems, but this is what exists in Australia. We've got angel investors at the early stage, then we go on to more institutional money, which is venture capital, VC we call it, and then we have a third category of funding, which is more recent in Australia, which is called debt, essentially loans. Now, with the first two types, angels and VCs, what you're doing is you're selling shares in your company to these investors, and so it's dilutive, whereas debt is non-dilutive. You'll essentially get a loan, but you'll keep all of the shares in your company. Angels tend to play at the early stage, so it might be when you just have an idea and you need a little bit of money to get it off the ground. Sometimes we call it a family and friends round, but there is the increasing professionalization of angel investors. So, you know, you might get access to a network of them. There's a few platforms where angels can band together, things like Aussie Angels and Flying Fox. But think of an angel investor just like an individual person. It might be, we call them high net worth. They've got a bit of money and they want to start investing in startups, and they're at the early stage. We then move on to venture capital, VC. This is slightly later stage. And essentially, these are fund managers. They manage other people's money and invest in startups on their behalf. A couple of key things to know. They'll have a mandate. So they'll invest in a particular interest area, perhaps climate or SaaS businesses or marketplaces. Important to know if you're going to raise money, because there's no point pitching your home service marketplace to a fund that invests in climate tech, right? The other thing to know is that because it's other people's money, there's typically a timeline. It's usually 10 years in which they need to get a return. So it's important to know if you sell your shares to a venture fund, they're going to need some sort of exit event within a 10-year period, whether that's selling the company, listing it, or being able to on-sell their shares. Because that's the commitment they make to their investors, their LPs, that they'll get a return within that period of time. And then we have debt, like I said, non-dilutive. It can work really well when you've got a company that's making revenue, predictable revenue stream, and you want to take a loan against that. It's new because although banks have been around for a long time, banks won't loan to startups because they don't have security, unless you're willing to mortgage your personal house against the loan that you take. Whereas some new companies like Tractor Ventures has essentially built technology which allows them to loan against the revenue stream of a company. And so that's a really great new way to get access to funding for startups.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. So if we go through that, then we've got our angel investors who I think, you know, broadly speaking, a lot of people watch, you know, for example, a Dragon's Den or something and think like that's how investing works. Then we've got VC who investing essentially other people's money. I think what was really interesting from my perspective is learning a bit more about debt. That wasn't something that I had understood before. And I think from, you know, an individual's perspective going into the startup journey, I think that sometimes debt can have a stigma to it, you know, particularly from a personal finance perspective. Can you talk to us a little bit more about how that works within the funding community for startups?
Yeah, well, I mean, as a startup founder myself, I always say any day I don't need to sell shares in my company is a good day. Because what happens is as you go, it's not like you just raise money once typically, right? You'll raise at the early stage. And at that very early stage, that's when you dilute the most because those angel investors are taking the most risk. It's typically just an idea. Maybe you've just made a few steps, but it's very unproven. And often you'll give up 20 to 30% of your company at that early stage. Then you later on go and raise from VC where you might dilute by another 10, 15%. And as you go on, by the end of your journey, the exit you need to get in your business to make the same return becomes larger and larger because your own equity has diluted quite significantly. Whereas with debt, because you're not diluting your shares, you're actually retaining a lot more value. So although you might be, I mean, you will be paying interest on the loan, you can calculate the cost of that today versus the value of the equity you're giving up in the longer term.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I think it's one of those extraordinary things about finance, particularly that as women often, we aren't educated into understanding that. And I wonder if you feel like those different nuances of the funders, so the three different types, do you feel like they have different attractiveness based on whether you're male or female? Do you find from your experience that more males or females tend to fall into each category or not so much?
Look, Jen, I think sadly the reality is that women receive such a small portion of funding overall. I mean, the latest statistics came out this week from Cut Through Ventures report that in Australia, female-only led businesses receive a mere 4% of total funding. So I would love to think that women are able to be selective in the types of funding they take. But I think the reality is it's really hard for them to access any funding at all. But what I love about the concept of debt funding, particularly for female-led business, is we know that women tend to build more profitable, higher revenue businesses. They, because they bootstrap for longer, because they can't often raise the money earlier, they become a really great candidate for debt from a company like Tractor because they've got a predictable revenue stream and so they can retain more of their business. So, you know, it is something that we will see become more popular, I think, with women over time as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And look, Milby, you just mentioned it. I think we can agree that gender certainly plays a role in finding success, as in finding funding at all in Australia. Can you talk to me a little bit about any support systems that exist for female funders in Australia? You know, do we have communities, formal, informal support networks? How does that work?
So we'll talk about for the funders and the founders. I think you just asked me about funders there. So it's interesting, like, when we talk about angel investors, what we're seeing, and I mentioned earlier, is the professionalization of angel investing. So what that looks like is a lot of platforms that are coming where you can band together essentially as a network of angel investors. Okay. So when I raised from an angel investor with Urban U, that investor wrote us a large check, $500,000. Now that is great, but not as common. And often people want to become involved in investing, but they, you know, they don't have a spare $500,000 lying around. what right. these platforms do is they allow people to get involved with much smaller amounts of money, so upwards of $5,000. And I think that's okay. a bit of a secret. People don't know that. They think like it's a, you know, it's a, needs to, you need to be really wealthy to be able to invest in startups. And that's not the case at all.
Yeah, that's certainly something I thought.
Yeah, most people do. It's not widely known. And I think it's really important that we demystify that. And so these platforms like Aussie Angels and Flying Fox and Scale, they allow people to firstly learn about it. There's an education component. We're seeing a lot of the VC funds run programs for people to learn about angel investing. And then they can join together, like I say, as a network and become involved. So Flying Fox, for example, they've been quoted as saying that 50% of their investors are women. And so that's definitely an avenue we're seeing grow for female funders.
Right.
In terms of female founders, there are certainly a lot of networks springing up for them as well. I've been involved in an organization called SBE for I've been on the board for 5 years. I did the program myself back in, I think, 2015 maybe. And, you know, they help women grow networks. We know that's one of the biggest inhibitors of raising capital. Men have access to the old boys club, the men they grew up with that went on to earn more money because they didn't have the gender pay gap to deal with. They didn't have to take time out of work to raise a child, all of those things. And so putting networks around women to help them grow their capacity is really important. So Springboard SBE Australia is a really important one. There's a lot of education programs, Tech Ready Women, Flying Fox has one for women as well. There's funds that are dedicated just to women because we know that, as I say, they grow more successful businesses. And so it's not just a women's issue, it's an economic opportunity. So funds like Aliavia, Scale Investors, F5 Collective are all dedicated to just investing in women.
That's so interesting. I think one of the things that I was hearing about in that space is around, I think it's called Capital Plus, is that right? Where those part of those networks coming together is about offering women more than funding when they are starting out in a business so that they have other areas of support, for example, like babysitting if they need to go to a meeting.
That's a really interesting concept. I think one of the important things to know with your investors is you want to get more than money from them, right? And so, money is obviously important and it's one of the greatest inhibitors, but there are a whole lot of other factors. I know when I was building Urban U, one of the things, you know, we were first-time founders. We didn't know what we were doing. We'd never done it before. And now a lot of the funds are putting advisory support, for instance, around their funders and providing access to mentors. And actually that's what I do a lot of now. So like I work with Tractor Ventures and you mentioned a few other organizations at Black Nova. A big part of our value add is that we have ex-founders that will, you know, get their hands dirty and dig in and help you build your business as well.
Because I think that's so important. You know, we were talking about in the intro, we're talking about part of the point of this series is helping us all to understand the amplification of women's voices and how that happens within tech. And I think particularly, you know, if you're working in that startup or scale up environment, really being able to balance that with anything outside of the workplace is an extraordinary commitment. So from my understanding, when I came into the tech industry sort of three and a half years ago, I had never thought about that as a reality, that you're not just going to be asking these people for money. Really, it needs to be much more of an ecosystem than that. I think it's brilliant that those things are starting to come, and it's great to see people like yourself, you know, who have been through these programs and benefiting from that, and then generationally going back to make sure that you're giving that support as well. I guess from that perspective, what do you think could be done to improve institutional, community, and I guess also on an individual level, what do you think can be done to improve the situation for female tech startups and scale-ups, really looking at the Australian market in particular?
So let's maybe start with just talking about what the landscape looks like for women at the moment. I mentioned that there's a significant funding gap at the moment. 4% of total venture funding goes to female-led business, and that's a company with an all-female founding team. With a mixed gender team, it's 13%, so a little higher, but still not great. You know, I find it really astounding when, you know, VCs are driven by data, that is their model, and yet all of the data shows that diverse teams perform better, and yet they're still pouring their money into businesses that are led solely by men.
And what's your experience been, Noga, having those conversations? You know, you are in the rooms with these people, right? So when you raise those questions about the data supporting, you know, diverse or female-led founders, what's the response like? Or is it still a conversation that it's kind of not appropriate to have? Like, how does that conversation take place?
Look, I think there's an acceptance in the community that you can't ignore the gender gap. You know, we're not talking about a small issue. We're talking about a persistent gap of, you know, 98%, like 96%. So it's hard to ignore. What I've seen over the last few years is there's been a much more willingness on the part of funders to talk about it. But the focus has been largely on programs to help train women, let's say, how to pitch to fund. Because, you know, when you go, I've been in rooms where I'm pitching for money and you're just looking at a sea of middle-aged white men in suits. They're not very diverse themselves either. And this is, you know, quite honestly, like, this is why a lot of this happens, because people tend to invest in things that they understand. So firstly, the businesses that women might be pitching. For me, home services, I was telling these, you know, middle-aged white men in suits how hard it was for women to find good help at home, to find great cleaners. And you know, they just, like, glared over at me, like, I don't understand this problem at all. And so the program, so I did SBE, which helped me understand that actually what I needed to be telling these people was talk through the numbers, explain the business through numbers and how they were going to make money. Investors want to make money. So when we started saying the business was doubling every month, you know, we had very low churn rate. This was like a $15 billion industry in Australia alone. All of a sudden the pennies started dropping and we were more successful at raising money. And in fact, we raised $1 million from a VC 2 weeks out of that program. So, you know, a lot of the focus has been on helping women to pitch better, to understand their numbers better, all of those things. And they are important, 100%. But we're helping very small numbers of women, and we have not made a dent in the overall system. So it's quite challenging. This is not a women's issue. This is a systems issue. And so, you know, your question was, what's the conversation like? Over the last year, I've seen it really turn to how can we change that system? And so there's an initiative called Equity Clear, which launched recently, which is around mandatory reporting of diversity data. And I think if we look at, for example, the gender pay gap situation, you know, we have seen that asking companies to voluntarily pay women the same amount as men doesn't work. It's not until there's regulation in place and reporting requirements that they're scared, embarrassed, whatever it is, into doing it. And so, you know, I think that's going to be the same here. And so we've seen a lot of the VCs sign up to that program, Equity Clear, and we're starting to see the numbers come through, and that's great because at least we get a better picture of what's going on. So the conversations are open. Of course, there are always going to be deniers and haters and whatnot. But I think on the whole, the industry, there's a real willingness to address this issue. The question is, how do we do it? And my belief is this is a whole of ecosystem approach needed. We need government, we need private industry all on board, and we need to make real changes at the systemic level. You know, I think we need a national independent body to support these changes and really build out a roadmap. And that's really what I'm focused on doing in the near term, is looking at how we can get something like that up and running.
Yeah, I think there's so much to unpack in that response, isn't there? Because, you know, from that, the initial frustration in that conversation, I know we've all been in a room, and I certainly have, where you're explaining something or talking about something that is so standard and so everyday in your life, and you see these like blank faces, and then you realize like, oh, this isn't your reality. And kind of how that attaches onto this, you know, females as some sort of social issue, you know, like, oh, once a year, you know, we need to tick a box and like we should invest in like a female thingo or whatever that is, as though it's not 50 and more percent of the population and we're not the people making the purchase decisions. It's such an extraordinarily frustrating system to be part of, I think, and that's perpetuated throughout society. You know, it's not just in tech. What I'm really interested to hear you talking about then is, you know, it does feel to me, and part of the reason for starting this series is it feels as though the last kind of 12 months has really been quite transformative and something of a tipping point in terms of a lot of people within tech starting to really galvanize and move forward with, look, we're going to have to be the progress ourselves. So can you talk to us a little bit more? You've said you're working on a roadmap to try and really start initiating that systemic change. What does that look like, Noga? Which parts of that can you share with us?
So look, it's all kind of in progress at the moment. We're out there. We will be out there soon. We haven't. This is actually the first time I'm publicly talking about it, so this is exciting. It's not publicly out there, but we certainly will be trying to get some funding for this up and running in the next couple of months. So that is something that if people are interested in supporting, I'd love them to reach out. You know, and it's one of those. I was quoting Esther Perel yesterday. You know, where should we begin?
Yeah, right.
Because there's so many things that we need to change. But I think for me, the number one point on this is we need to be applying a gender lens to all innovation funding in Australia. So we look at what the government is putting towards women, and it's very small amounts of money. So, you know, Launchpad is doing a great job at supporting women, but these are small buckets that are allocated to, you know, female projects. But if we look at what the government spends overall on innovation, this is billions of dollars. So if we were to understand what applying a gender lens to all of that funding looks like, we would start to see, and also potentially having targets, we would start to see a really different outcome. And that gender lens, you know, we're asking VCs to report on their diversity, but we're not helping them understand how to apply a gender lens to their investing. These are skills that need to be learned. They're not just innate. And we can see that because it's not working right now. And so we have organizations, you know, the SBE, a lot of these organizations that are doing an amazing job, but their businesses themselves, you know, they need to be out there running programs, getting their own funding. They don't have the capacity to do the capacity building that is required to make these changes. So that is what a body like this needs to look like, and be empowered to do. You know, one of the things that I think about a lot is procurement, right? So if there was a gender lens applied to procurement, like this is where women really struggle as well, not just to raise funding, but to get their foot in the door, to sell their products into government, into other organizations. If a gender lens was applied to all procurement activities, again, we would start to see a real transformation in these women-led businesses. Yeah, lots to do, but where shall we begin?
I love that. Yeah, look, there's so much to go on with. And I think there's a couple of points to pull out there. For me, what's always interesting is, you know, often change is a story of getting things right from the top down and the bottom up at the same time, right? And I think that one of the things I've heard you talk about before, which I found really interesting, is that definition of success for female-founded businesses as well. I think it's so interesting, you know, when we talk about success, it's kind of we're looking for these unicorn businesses, but not everybody getting into a business or as a founder, not everybody has that same goal. You know, for some people, this is about generating a similar income to what they would generate in their regular job, but just owning it themselves. So can you talk to us a little bit more around how the funding landscape differentiates or supports or has options for women who are looking to found businesses because they are doing something exciting or different or that really matters to them, and their goal is not necessarily that unicorn status?
Yeah, this is a frustration. I think the media glamorizes raising money as a marker of success for a startup. And as I said earlier, any day I don't have to sell shares in my company as a founder is a good day. So, you know, the marker of success should be growing a profitable, sustainable business, not giving away, not having to sell shares to keep pumping up my company. Now, having said that, we need money for high growth businesses. It's not a bad thing to raise money. Like, that is necessary, but it's not necessary for all businesses. And what we see is, firstly, you know, we celebrate successes having raised money, but then we go on and celebrate successes a unicorn, like these, you know, billion, now closing in on like hundreds of billions of dollars of valuation. Now, that is important for venture funds. And this is what's important to understand is raising money from venture is all about building these really huge return businesses. We know that's really hard for women in this funding landscape, because not only do they raise such a small component of all overall funding, but they raise smaller amounts. So I think I'm just going to look at my notes here, but the data that was revealed is since 2019, women-led businesses have only had 3 rounds of $50 million plus deals. So again, that's like 2% of all of that size deal, and 7 $20 million rounds. So for them to get to that unicorn status is exponentially harder in so many ways. And it's not that they're incapable of doing it, it's just that they're not being given the opportunity to get there. And so the media needs to start talking about these success stories for women in a different way. And so what's interesting, for example, right? So when women do have exits, often because they haven't raised as much money along the way, they actually own a lot more equity in their business.
Right.
So they're actually getting a better financial return themselves. So an example of this, Christy Chong, who owned Monibody, she sold that a couple of years back for, I think it was quoted $140 million, if I'm getting that right. Now, she owned about half of that business herself personally when she exited. Now, that's a really impressive financial return. If you compare that to some other larger exits that have happened where they diluted down to a couple of percent themselves, you know, it's probably, you know, she's done really well there. So I'd love to see the media start telling stories about women without having to compare them to the unicorn tech exits. That's not what this is about. And you can't be what you can't see. So if we don't start developing these hero female founders, you know, young girls, women coming up through the system, they won't feel like being an entrepreneur is something that's for them. They won't see people that look like them doing it. And that's really important.
Yeah, I think this is such a valid concern. And as you rightly say, you know, the sense of sustainability or success or being able to manage the business at the level you want and run it on your terms should be celebrated as extraordinary achievements, you know, and we don't hear enough of those stories at the moment. So, Noga, having talked through the landscape today in terms of funding for female tech entrepreneurs in Australia, I'd love to close out this episode with some ideas for what we can do, each of us having listened to this, to change, to be the change that we want to see. What can we do? What can we ask of the industry? And how can we be useful ourselves?
Thanks, Jen. That's a great call out. I think the first thing is, you know, I know a lot of your audience are in the media industry and they have the power of content. So I'd love to see stories that hero female founders, that hero women in tech, women in STEM, you know, help younger girls to be that change to see those role models and look for different stories. You know, it doesn't have to be the same unicorn fundraise story. Talk about, you know, great products that are being developed that only women can solve for, right? Like, those are really interesting stories to be telling and really inspiring. I think the other thing for the media to have a role in here is holding the funding industry accountable. So, you know, report on the funding gap. If you go onto LinkedIn, on my feed, on your feed, we see it everywhere because we're involved in that sector. But how widely is it known generally? I think some people see this as a really niche problem. What's missing, right, is the women entrepreneurs. Sure, it's a small segment when you think of it that way. When you compare it to the general gender pay gap in general, people may think this is a small issue, but what they're missing is the bigger picture of the economic impact it has across the whole country. So not only are we losing billions of dollars from the businesses these women could and should be going on to build, but we know women, our founders, disproportionately hire women into their business. So we are missing a lot of women's economic empowerment. Angel investors, this is a great way for women to grow their own wealth. So this has a huge amount of flow-on impact for the economy. So report on this. Hold the industry accountable. And then I would say, like, check your own biases, right? So next time you're in a position where you're hiring or you're procuring, you get to choose a vendor that you work with, think about how you're sourcing that. Are you just getting the same old recommendations from your existing network, or are you pushing yourself out of your comfort zone to get more pipeline in there? And then how are you evaluating those businesses? You know, and so that's a great way to support women-led business by actually buying from them.
Yeah, I think we've got, you know, there are a few different things there, right? So there's types of organizations that we can follow, and you've mentioned a lot of those throughout the conversation today, where, you know, something as simple as coming out of this conversation, go ahead and looking all of the people we've mentioned today, look them up on LinkedIn, you know, support the businesses by being aware of them and by giving them traffic on their pages. I think within the media, yeah, there's really interesting conversations to be had around what we're covering and the stories that we're telling, you know, and as comms professionals, also for us to be empowering, you know, our spokespeople so that these stories are being heard and being told throughout the year as well. I think that that can work both ways. That's really interesting. So Noga, thanks so much for having the conversation today. I guess at Flip the Focus, really, we want to make sure that we're leaving people with a lasting impression of the person that we've been speaking to each time. So what would be your key advice or takeout that's a very Noga thing to say that we can all go on and take through our lives?
Oh, that's a great one. Look, I think the quote that I am living by at the moment, Jen, and I'd love your audience to take away is, we need to move away from fixing women and fix the system. Women are not the problem.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I absolutely love that. Thank you so much, Noga, again, for your time today. I will just remind everybody, this series is called Flip the Focus, and it's about amplifying women's voices in tech throughout Australia. Flip the Focus is made possible by Hotwire Australia. And if you want to become part of the community, you should check out Hotwire Australia on LinkedIn. There's heaps more content coming aside from the podcast. We've also got full podcasts, written interviews, blogs, super shareable quotes, one of which I'm sure will be that from Noga. So there's all sorts to see there. So come follow Hotwire Australia and be part of the Flip the Focus community. Noga, thank you so much for kicking us off, and thanks for your time today.